The Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio, that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Good morning, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Hey, Johnny.
Hi, buddy.
I'm here with the California Homebrewer of the Year for 2006, John Plisse. I'm Jameel Zainashef.
I'm Jonathan Plisse. It's going to be a funky one today.
Coffee already kicking in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't sound too good when you first came in.
No, I just spit up my lung.
One or both lungs?
One.
Okay. Well, today we're talking about Flanders Red Ale.
Yes, we are. The funkness.
Yes. Before we get to that, I wanted to cover a couple of things. One is, I don't know if we've mentioned it already or not, but I'm doing this Brew Your Own column.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be the style profile columnist for Brew Your Own magazine.
Congrats. That's great.
So all this information in written form. And, writing it down gives me a chance to actually think about what's being said instead of just rambling on.
Then we're going to get like a Jameel Z tell-all kind of book?
The tell-all book.
The tell-all book.
Yeah. All my secrets.
Yeah.
None of them having to do with brewing, but all my secrets.
Personal secrets.
Well, and one of the things, so that's, you know, eating up a bunch of time, and I got a lot of things, juggling a lot of balls in the air right now.
Right. Wow.
So perhaps it is that I've got all these things to do.
Right.
That when I get an email, you know, I don't mind people emailing, asking questions, and, you know, needing help with stuff. That's great. Glad that, you know, I'm sure you feel the same way. It's, mm-hmm. it's great to be able to help people out on this stuff. But when you're asking a question about something really basic and really simple, if you're just starting out in brewing.
Like how basic?
Yeah, it's just like, well, you know, does the sanitizer go into the water? Does it go into the malt extract? You know, what do I use the sanitizer for? Do I, you know, rinse my mouth with the sanitizer?
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like that, you know.
Don't brew, dude, if you don't know that.
No. Well, you know, try, you know, pick up a book. John Palmer's How to Brew is a great book.
Perfect.
And really a lot of great information there. Read through that. It'll answer a lot of the questions you might have. And the forum, you know, the brewingnetwork.com.
Or More Beers Forum.
Or More Beers Forum. Yeah, Northern Brewer has a forum. You know, there's a bunch of them. The Green Board. There's a bunch of them out there. And tons of people with great experience, and they can answer the majority of these types of questions.
Basically, you're spent on time, and you don't have time to do it.
Yeah, I'm thrashed, and you know, I'm getting a lot of these questions. I'm trying to answer as many as I can, and as fast as I can. And
how many emails are you getting? You think a week, just on beer related stuff?
Hundreds.
Wow.
Hundreds. Wow. Hundreds. So, I just need to try and maximize the time I'm spending getting these other things done. Once I'm through those, then I'll have more time for the more basic questions. But if you can, you know, hold off on the real basic ones, mm-hmm. you know, some people have some really good questions, and you know, such good questions that you know I think they always you know bear repeating mm-hmm. On the air. But sometimes, especially like we're getting a lot more real basic ones that people could try and.
I'm going to start sending you basic questions.
You know,
probably
you,
need
John.
The help, but.
Yeah, I
some
appreciate
random
that.
Email.
I appreciate the help, John. That's really kind of you.
I can just see your kids now, just like, Daddy, come on, leave the computer. Dad, come on.
Yeah, it's already pretty much that way.
7:30 is dinner time, kids.
Yeah, it's a lot of time in front of the computer. All right. Flanders Red Ale.
Yeah, I've had this of yours, by the way, like 3 years ago. And you've placed at the Nationals, I think, a few times, haven't you, with this beer?
Yeah, it's done pretty good. I think it is one of the trickiest beers to brew, but I've come up with a system for brewing it that is fairly repeatable and easy to get good results.
Is it consistent?
Yes.
Nice.
And more consistent than the traditional methods.
Like blending? You don't blend or anything?
No, I don't do any blending.
Oh, you're not traditional.
Right, so why don't we start off? Tell us about Flanders.
Well, Flanders, visually it's red, mm-hmm. maybe some hues of brown, nice head on it, you know, tan head. The aroma should be, you'll notice an acidity or a sour edge coming through, some fruitness, some esters, maybe a little bit of the ale strain from the spiciness, but very little bit. As far as the flavor is concerned, you'll probably get some plum, oranges, black cherries. Should be a malty beer from a lot of the crystal malts that you're going to be using, specialty or Vienna malt. It's usually an easy session beer, about 5%, easy drinking, and you know, the most intense flavor would probably be the acidity coming through and the sourness. It's definitely a perky beer, you know, and it's almost like a farmhouse beer, I would say, just mm-hmm. red in color and easy drinking and sour. Mm-hmm. What would you say?
I pretty much agree with that. I think my take on it is that, you know, they range in sourness. And so ones people might be familiar with would be like a Rodenbach or a Rodenbach Grand Cru. So they have regular Rodenbach, which is actually they brew this sour beer and they bottle it up, and that's Rodenbach Grand Cru. It's aged, you know, a number of years, and it's gotten quite sour and fairly dry because the sourness, the bugs are eating up all those residual sugars, that mm-hmm. unfermentable sugars, and it ends up fairly dry, not too dry. There's still some malt character to it and some malt sweetness, but you know, quite sour. Not as sour as, you know, the most sour lambics, but okay. fairly sour.
Okay.
Then they take an unsoured beer, and they blend that 75% of this unsoured beer with 25% of what is essentially the Grand Cru.
Wow.
And that is regular Rodenbach.
Okay.
So it's not nearly as sour. It's still quite tart and sour, but there's quite a bit more maltiness mm-hmm. and residual sugar there to balance that sourness. And it's a much easier drinking beer. And that's actually my favorite, is regular Rodenbach.
Now, do they do that historically and continually with that same blend, or do they just always have a Grand Cru around? And
yeah, I'm sure the levels of the amounts that they blend vary.
Okay,
and they're doing all sorts of blending. They have these massive vats, and they're, you know, blending different portions to get you know a fairly consistent product.
And are they blending all this in oak?
They use oak, large oak vats.
Wow.
As well. Okay. So there is some oak character there. Huh. The other commercial brews that people may be familiar with, like the Duchess or
I've had the Duchess before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what you'll find in a lot of those is actually they use either you know, some sort of saccharin, or they'll sweeten it back using an artificial sweetener that won't ferment. And it's actually fairly common. I've seen that in most of them. And they'll say on the label, a lot of times you'll see saccharin listed. And you know, it has that kind of artificial sweetener kind of thing. Which is...
doesn't sound good.
Yeah, you know, I like the way Rodenbach does it, which they're blending with unsoured beer to, you know, a fairly sweet unsoured beer to build that back up, and it has a much nicer taste, I think.
That's a lost art, you know, blending.
Right, and something like that, you know, takes a lot of effort and a lot of time, and it's more expensive, obviously, than just tossing in some saccharin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these ones that do it, in Belgium, they don't think a lot, they don't see it as being wrong to, you know, just sweeten something back if they need to. And it makes it more approachable by the general consumer, I think, is part of what they're doing.
They're like winemakers.
Yeah, yeah, they don't care what they put in there as long as the end product tastes the way they want it to taste. Yeah. You know, they're fine with that, which is something that, you know, we tend to go, oh my God, how can you do that? How can you add saccharin or table sugar to something?
When did you first have a Flanders Red?
You know, quite a few years ago. I'm not sure. It's been quite a while. But it is absolutely one of my favorite styles. It's one of those things that, you know, I really like the Schwarz beer. I really like, you know, all these. And of the funky beers,
that's the
Flanders
one.
Red.
Yeah.
Because it can be, you know, quite balanced and easy to drink. It's got that tartness and a little bit of a slight barnyardy kind of thing going on. Not much, but a little bit. And
it's tasty, though.
Yeah, and it ends up a really drinkable style. It's just a joy to have. Let's see here. The trick is in getting that balance between the sour and the funky and the residual sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it a couple of ways. You can make the recipe we're going to be make one version with just straight California ale yeast and have this sweet, unsoured beer.
Why not a Belgian yeast?
And then, because a lot of the Belgian phenolics are not appropriate in this style.
Okay.
You know, there's a couple examples out there where they do that, but, you know, it's too much going on,
right,
if you ask me. I like it to be a little more straightforward.
Okay.
And if you go with the, you can brew this unsoured beer, and then brew a version soured with all the appropriate bugs, and then blend them.
Just 50-50?
To get the... Well, it's going to depend. Yeah, you're going to do it by taste. Mm-hmm. But you may end up with only using 25% of the soured beer and, you know, 100% of the non-soured, and you're going to need to go that route. And some people do that. I've got some friends. They've got barrels, and they're blending, and they're doing that whole thing.
Nice.
And the results are okay, but...
Do you think it's better to ferment it all at once in one fermenter?
Well, what I've been doing is I do it all at one time. There's no need for blending, and I'm ending up with a pretty consistent result.
In the primary, the whole way through?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I'll get into that process here in a second. That's the thing.
Okay.
So one of the keys to getting enough residual malt sweetness and the key to getting enough malt character to balance that sour and barnyard character is quite a bit of specialty malts. Now, I seriously doubt that Rodenbach is adding all this junk into their into their beer.
Right.
But the resulting flavor, I gotta say, is very, very close between this and between Rodenbach.
Wow. I'm curious now.
That's, you know, part of the key. So I can't explain exactly why this would be that close, but...
And this is your original recipe here?
This is my original recipe.
Oh, my God.
And this, this was created almost in a vacuum. But it worked out just fantastic. And other people have brewed this and had great success with it.
Mm.
So most of the base of this is Pilsner malt. So Pilsner and Vienna. It's almost half-half Pilsner and Vienna in this case for a 6 U.S. gallon, 23-liter batch. Anticipated original gravity is going to be 1061 or 15 Plato. And we're going to go with a 90-minute boil, assuming a 70% efficiency, 4.5 pounds of Pilsner malt. It's about 2 kilos of Pilsner malt, 5 pounds of Vienna, 2.26 kilos of Vienna. Then we're getting into the specialty grains. We're going with 1/2 pound of aromatic, about a quarter kilo of aromatic, 3 pounds of Munich malt, which is about 1.36 kilos, 1/2 pound of Kara Munich, which is about a quarter kilo, and 1/2 pound of wheat, which is about, again, a quarter kilo of wheat. And so the aromatic, the Kara Munich, the special B, the wheat,
right,
and than a healthy portion of Munich and Vienna.
Right.
And then, you know, you end up, your Pilsner is down to about 31%
of
the total grist.
Holy mackerel.
So it's a lot of these malty flavors and things. And what's going to happen is the bugs that you're putting in there,
mm-hmm.
they're going to, the regular yeast will not ferment out these specialty malts.
Right.
So you're going to end up with, if you ferment this with just cow ale yeast, you're going to end up with quite a bit of residual sweetness in there.
Yeah, your original was 1060.
It's not going to attenuate. It's going to attenuate down to like the 1020s.
Wow. Okay.
Which is where you want it.
Right.
And then the bugs eat those residual sugars and work them down, and that's where the sweetness, the sourness comes from.
How much further down does it go? From like if it was a 1020? It's hard to predict, but...
Yeah, it'll go, maybe to 10.9, 10.10. It depends on the level of bugs you put in there and the temperatures and how long you let it go until you refrigerate it, things like that.
See ya.
All right, so after the break, we will talk about the hops and a little bit of the mash schedule and extract brewing things like that.
And contaminate you.
Yeah.
Did you know that not only can you order from More Beer online at morebeer.com and receive free shipping on most orders over $59, but you can also shop in person at their two retail locations located in Concord and Riverside, California. In fact, the Concord facility has grown to over 15,000 square feet to fit all the new products, expanded showroom, and new Knowledge Center classroom. And now, in conjunction with the Brewing Network, More Beer is making it easier than ever to keep up on what's happening. Look for the all-new More Beer Monthly podcast at morebeer.com later in January. You'll learn about More Beer's history, sales and discounts on More Beer products, get to know team members, and hear coupon codes during the podcast to save you money. So go to morebeer.com or call 800-600-0033. That's 800-600-0033. And don't forget to check in later this month for the new More Beer Monthly podcast, a production of the Brewing Network. This is the Jameel Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about Flanders Red Ale, which mm-hmm. is a sour beer from the Flanders region of Belgium.
Mm-hmm. When you wrote your recipe, did you do it all by taste?
Yes, yes.
And you were just like, I get this malt, maybe a little bit of this malt, right. Maybe a little bit of this.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You notice that. Yeah, this is one of those recipes where...
You just don't find this recipe on the street and be like, hey, Ray Daniels can have a Flanders Red Ale, you know.
Right.
Probably has one, but...
I had never seen anything along the lines of this recipe for this style of beer.
It's unique.
It's unusual, yes. And it works well. So we were going over the grains before the break, and so we got 31% Pilsner malt, 34.5% Vienna, 20.7% Munich, 3.4% of each of the following: aromatic, Kara Munich, special B, and wheat malt.
Hmm.
Now, for the hops on this, I like to use Kent Goldings. And I will just use it for bittering at 60 minutes. I'll do I've got a 5.7% alpha Goldings hop. I'll use 0.7 ounces of the East Kent Goldings at 60 minutes or 20 grams, which gives me about 15.5 IBUs.
Mm.
So not a lot of bittering, enough to kind of carry some of the sweetness. But, again, some of that sweetness is going to get eaten up. And
right.
Normally in a 1060-some-odd beer, you would go with quite a bit more bittering. Even in a Bock, you're going to have more than 15 IBUs.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get up into the 20s.
And you're pretty conservative on those.
Yeah, so you're going to go less, and the reason is, and if you taste this before it sours, it's going to be, you know, way too sweet.
Yeah. I would not want a real sour beer and bitter. Ugh.
Right. Yeah.
It does not sound good.
Right, right. Yeah, if it's real bitter and sour, it doesn't go well.
Not at all.
Now, the other thing about this is you age it over time, and so any bittering there also drops, so your bittering drops even more over time, because this beer takes about a year to make.
Really?
Yeah.
Before you even drink it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Takes about a year.
And how long does it ferment for?
Technically, about a year. I want to interrupt with a little aside. The other day,
yeah,
Trader Joe's sells these pomegranate seeds that are already removed from the pomegranate because I'm, you know, being as rich and lazy as I am,
right,
I can't afford the time to take apart my own pomegranate, so I can buy the seeds from Trader Joe's in these packs.
Yeah,
and my wife bought like three of these packs. I ate the first two; they were great, and the third pack, they were carbonated.
Oh, no.
They had fermented inside the little things. And they were like all spritzy as I was eating them. And I'm thinking, well, and they taste kind of funky, too. And so I had some more.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, this is really bizarre. You know, they're carbonated. And they're like spritzing in my mouth as I chew them.
Yeah.
It's
unique.
And I'm like, and the flavor's kind of funky. I wonder what kind of spoilage organism is, you know, doing this. And
yeah.
Whether it's like a wild yeast or, you know,
yeah. Did you bacteria play it?
Or whatever. No, I didn't. Because after like, you know, the third spoonful of these things, I'm thinking, you know, this could be something that could kill me because this isn't beer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a food that, you know, I'm not sure the acidity is low enough, but maybe in a pomegranate seed it is.
I hope so.
I didn't want to take any chances. Because I'm thinking,
E. coli.
You know, yeah, it could be. Yeah, who knows? You know, somebody's picking fruit and wiping and not washing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so I threw the rest away. But
well, you look good.
Yeah, I'm feeling okay.
Okay.
So I don't think it was anything really bad.
I wish I could have been there to see your face.
I was quite surprised.
Yeah, you know, things, you know, exploding in your mouth is kind of a unique experience. I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like things exploding in my mouth. I'm like JP. I want to let people confuse you and JP.
No.
Because your initials are JP. They think you're the same people.
Just call me Jip.
Yeah. You're John, and JP, Justin, Jason Petros.
Call me Hey You.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
All right, so sorry about that aside. But
that's a good story.
Again, the sourness, you don't want the sour and the bitter. And what we're going to do is you're going to ferment this out. You're going to make this wort. I use a mash temperature of around 154 or 68 degrees C and a mash out temp of 168, 76 degrees C, and then sparge, you know, like normal, 170, 77 degrees C.
So you do high mash, long chain dextrins you want?
Yeah, yeah.
To get that maltiness through? Or
fairly, and one of the things that I'll do is I'll ferment with, I'll pitch one tube of California ale yeast or one smack pack of California ale yeast, the 1056 or Cal ale yeast, into this wort. And I'll hold it around 65 degrees. I don't want it to ferment a lot. I want it to be like a semi-incomplete fermentation.
So you want it to actually poop out before it even goes to terminal.
Yeah, I don't want it to finish out right. That's why I'm shooting for in the 1020s.
Wow.
In the finishing gravity.
So is that why your gravity is higher than the guidelines? I mean, you got your original gravity? I mean,
right. And what we're doing there is, you know, you need a clean fermentation, not a lot of funky things. If you want to use a Belgian strain and get some phenolics in there, you can. But I like to use the clean Cal ale yeast, get it down there to a certain point. And if you don't do all these tricks, Cal ale yeast is pretty attenuative.
Right.
So you get it down to this point, and then what I use is I can do this in whatever container you want, and then I'll transfer this to a plastic bucket, and I'll add some oak cubes, add about an ounce of French medium toast.
Nice.
And if you want to sanitize those, you get yourself a cup of boiling water and pour that on the oak cubes and let it sit for 10 minutes and 15 minutes. And then you can just toss the whole thing into the bucket, you know, and get that oak flavor in there too. And then I add the beer, and then I add Weiss Rose Lair package, which is a blend of, it's got California Ale yeast in it, or the 1056 yeast in it.
Really?
And it's got, lacto or PDO and a couple other things in there.
Wow.
And it is the perfect blend to mimic Rodenbach.
Okay.
It is fantastic. Now, they...
No Brett.
They were going to... I'm not sure. I have to ask. Greg told me at one point what was in there, but I can't really remember.
Okay.
All I know is they do a masterful job with this thing. Right. And there's just no beating it.
Okay.
So they were going to pull this as a strain that they weren't going to use anymore and...
keep it for themselves.
Said, wait, you can't get rid of that. And yeah. I talked to Dave Logsdon. I said, hey, you're getting rid of my Rose Lair.
Yeah.
And he goes, we are? He goes, that doesn't sound right. So I guess you can still get the Rose Lair. You may have to ask them. But last I talked to them, they're saying, yeah, if you need Rose Lair, you can get Rose Lair.
Yeah, we sold that before. So
yeah. And you just toss that in. You don't have to smack the pack or anything. You just tear it open, pour the contents in.
And this is in the bucket.
In the bucket.
Buried underground.
And just set it somewhere where your average temperature is in the, mid-60s to upper 60s. The temperature that you do this at is going to affect how fast this thing goes to completion. Pardon me.
It's okay.
And so the warmer, the faster it's going to go, but it's also going to affect the amount of vinegar character you get. Same thing with the amount of oxygen. Hmm. You need a hint of acetic or vinegar character in this. That's kind of part of a Flanders. It isn't all lactic. There's a hint of these other...
Acetobacter? Or?
But you don't want it too vinegary.
Right.
And, your temperature and the amount of oxygen is going to affect the overall finish of that.
Well, how do you do that?
Control temperature, or
no? How do you get that vinegar flavor into your beer? I mean,
it's gonna be as part of these the bugs that are in there.
It'll just happen naturally.
Yeah, and also you need some oxygen to get into this thing. Now, a plastic buck will actually give you too much oxygen.
Okay,
it's worked for me,
but you're okay with that.
But, maybe a bit too much, and it's going to maybe give you more of a vinegar character than you want. One of the things, I've run some tests using a carboy with a plastic hood. Raj Apta, he has a site, and he worked out the calculations as to how much oxygen you need to get into these beers. And he has a thing on a site where he took like a oak... chair leg and cut it off, and he's got it tapered to fit his carboy, and he puts that in there and uses it kind of like a bung in the carboy, and he lets it get wet and wick the beer up, and also allow a certain amount of oxygen in. He's calculated it based on what Rodenbach gets, based on the size of their vats and the oak that they're using and the thickness, and because the volumes are so large, they get very little air in per gallon of beer. So he's got this thing worked out with the oak chair leg.
Yeah.
And if you go to a site, I can't remember the name of the site, but if you look for Raj, R-A-J, Apta, it's like A-P-T-E, I think.
Yeah.
Flanders, or Raj and Flanders, you'll probably find it. There's not a lot of Rajs talking about Flanders. And he's got a lot of interesting things on his site, and I've spoken with him. He's put a lot of thought into this, and it's worth reading what he's got there. And when I told him I was doing it in plastic buckets, he thought that was close to impossible.
Really?
Yeah, but the results were really good, so I've kind of kept that. Right now I've got one going. I did 10 gallons. I've got 5 in the plastic bucket and 5 in a carboy. And the interesting thing is that you'll see a pellicle form. So you've fermented this with Cal Ale yeast just to get the bulk of sugars out of the way and get you to a stable point. Then you add your bugs. And the thing about adding your bugs early on is if the temperature is just right and the amount of yeast you pitch is just right and the yeast viability is just right and the oxygen is just right and everything's just right, it'll end up at the right point and everything will be fine.
Okay.
But when I did that, you know, sometimes it's way too sour, sometimes not sour enough. So, you know, and certain characters come just screaming out at you, and it's hard to get the thing to be consistent.
Does it change over time, though, as it ferments?
Yes. But, okay. You know, it was hard for it to be consistent. And so what the reason I like doing this ale yeast first and then the bugs is it's far more consistent.
Right.
There's less for the bugs to work on. So they tend to be a little more controlled, and you get more of what you're looking for. So that's why I do the ale yeast first. So you're getting it down there to in the 10-20s, or, you know, 6 Play-Doh or so, 5 or 6 Play-Doh. And then you're adding your bugs. And those bugs, you'll put it in there. You put your beer around, 65 degrees or warmer, 18 degrees C temperature. Yeah, 18 to 20, 65 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And what will happen in a few weeks, depending on how much oxygen it has, the temperature and all this, it's going to form what's called a pellicle. It's like a
white film?
You know, yeah, like a crusty, cheesy layer.
Yummy.
And it'll be like, a quarter inch thick or whatever. And it'll form on the surface of the beer. And this is, protects the beer from the oxygen and things like that. And it's the bugs forming this thing.
Cool.
And what you need to have happen is, and people go, well, how do I know when it's done? Until the pellicle forms completely and then falls and breaks up and falls to the bottom, the beer's not ready.
So wait till it drops.
Yeah, you got to wait till the pellicle drops.
Okay.
And then it's ready.
Okay.
So, if you're really impatient, you can kind of shake it a little bit, but I wouldn't. I let it sit there. I look at it every few weeks just to make sure everything's fine. The airlock's topped off. You use an airlock. The thing is, in the plastic bucket, and I've got this side by side right now, the pellicle formed and dropped in a quarter of the time.
Oh no!
That the carboy with the less
oxygen exposure,
less oxygen had.
Oh weird! Same
so,
beer and everything.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, side by side, same bugs, everything.
So is that because you have more surface area in the bucket, you think? And there's more air on top, too?
I think it's all based on oxygen.
Oh, odd.
So the amount of oxygen apparently has a huge effect in the formation and drop into the pellicle.
So what are you going to do? Drink it?
Yeah, I'm going to drink it.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
Kind of a confusing question.
Yeah.
So
won't the bugs compete with the ale strain, though, if you did them at the same time in the primary?
Yes.
Is that why you do them separate? Because you can manipulate the Cal Ale and kill it at 20 and
right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because and the blend that they do in that Y Yeast Rose Lair pack, the blend in there is great, and I'm sure it gets you really close, but I think you really need to have a much better control over the parameters such as temperature and oxygen and things like that to get it to work out just right. Because again, everything's competing with each other, and that's why I like to start with Cal Ale yeast or the 1056, ferment it down, and then pitch the white yeast bugs.
And then you just forget about it for 1 year.
Yeah, it'll take at least 6 months to a year.
Gnarly.
And once it's gone and the pellicle has dropped, then you go ahead and put that thing in a keg.
Yeah.
Or you could rack it to another carboy if you want and seal it up and let it sit for another 6 months or so.
Do you dedicate a keg to this type of bacteria, exposure to your beer? Or
I used to.
Okay.
And I used to be real concerned. I thought, anytime I worked with these types of creatures for lambics or Flanders, something like that, I worried about it, thinking, "Oh, I'm going to contaminate all my other beers. You need separate equipment, all that." But Dave Sampsis was telling me, he goes, "Well, why are you concerned?" He says, "There's lactobacillus and pediococcus and enterobacter and all this stuff all over the place."
Good point.
Your grain is covered in lactobacillus, but do you have any problems with sour beers? No. So it's really based on, you know, the process and keeping your equipment clean. Now, soft plastic wear.
Like the seals on the kegs, replace those?
Yeah, even the, you know, I take my kegs completely apart.
Okay.
Every time.
Wow.
No matter what I use, what beer's been in there. So, you know, taking these completely apart and giving them a thorough cleaning in hot PBW and, you know, soaking them in sanitizer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not concerned about any bugs that way. Now, my plastic goods, the plastic buckets, I wouldn't use that plastic bucket for another beer just because plastic is so difficult to clean.
Right.
And plastic gets just a billion little micro scratches in it. It may seem smooth to you, but you rub your hand across a bucket and you've added scratches to it. The plastic's, you know, fairly soft.
Really?
Very, very, very fine stuff.
What about glass?
Glass, no. Glass would be okay.
Okay.
So glass is much easier to clean.
Okay.
And keep sanitized. So plastic buckets, I tend to
dedicated.
Wait until I have a plastic bucket that, either dedicated or, you know, it's I've been using it for other things, and then I want to make this, and I just go ahead and use it, and then it becomes like a wastewater bucket for something else.
Could you spit in your beer and get a Flanders? I mean,
personally, yes, I probably could.
Okay.
But I don't recommend this for the average brewer.
Your genetic makeup, you have the Rosalera in your mouth.
Yeah, I could probably pee in your beer and it would turn out fine. We should try that.
Hail the Pope.
Yes, I just wave, I bless the beer and off it goes.
Shit, you could pee on me.
Yeah. All right, listen.
All right, okay.
So, I wouldn't worry too much about sanitation. You know, I wouldn't be lax about sanitation, though. This is control. Now, a lot of times, here's the big mistake people make, is they will have a beer that goes bad, and then they'll say, well, I'll call this a Lambic or a Flanders or I'll call it Belgian. No, it's garbage. Just throw it out. Okay? When you're making something like this, it's a very purposeful, very planned approach, and you need to control what you're doing. And so, you know, keeping your process clean is an important part. Now, that doesn't mean you can't experiment with some of these things. Dave Sapsis, he uses like the kitchen sponge, and grows that up and stuff. And he does all sorts of really weird things.
He squeezes it all out when he wets it down?
No, I think he throws a sponge in. I've plated a sponge before, and it just horrible bacteria all over your kitchen sponge.
What do you think about plating your mouth?
I've spit on a plate before and like nothing grew.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
You're weird. That's not normal.
I've had my kids like cough and spit on plates and nothing comes out. Kitchen sponge, your kitchen is foul. I'll tell you that right now. You wouldn't want to see what grows off of that.
That'd be a good show. A little lacto show? No. Justin's like, no.
Anyways, you need some cleanliness there.
So.
All right, so when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how to make a good Flanders.
Early this morning, knocked upon my door. Early this morning, knocked upon my door.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not.
Now. The Jameel Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about Flanders Red Ale.
Mm-hmm.
And the recipes, all the recipes for these shows. We've done 24, 25, 26 shows, 27 shows, something like that.
Wow.
In the upper 20s. All the recipes for these shows can be found. There's a link if you go to www.thebrewingnetwork.com. Go to the Jameel page. And you'll see the list of shows that we've done, and you can download any of those and listen to old shows. And if you scroll down to the end of that list, you'll find a link to a site that has all our recipes on it.
Nice. One day, maybe I'll have a recipe up.
I think you do. I think we put your Helles recipe up there, too.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm moving up in the world.
You see, what you need to do is actually pay attention to what we're doing.
Oh, right.
And look and
see
what our recipes are.
What was that? I missed that.
And see what we're doing, because I think we posted that there.
All right.
Not that anybody's downloading it, but we posted it anyways.
So you read off your grain bill earlier.
Yeah.
And according to the guidelines, they use flaked maize.
Uh-huh.
And my guess is they do that to dry it out a little bit or the fermentability purposes, but why don't you use any?
Yeah, you know, flaked maize can be can help with the drying, but it also may not help with the drying. Depends on what mash temp you use.
So they might be adding it.
Just because it's corn doesn't mean it's going to be any more fermentable. Because when you add flake corn,
mm-hmm.
the enzymes that are converting your malt starches
mm-hmm.
are converting those corn starches,
okay.
right? And they're making the same types of sugar. Either they're making short chain sugars or long chain sugars. Just because it comes from corn doesn't make it a different type of sugar.
Okay.
So you can end up with same thing with rice. Even you
right.
can end up with a lot of body. Off of a high mash temp with rice or corn. The thing with corn is it adds a certain flavor, that kind of corn sweetness type of flavor to it.
Do you think that would complement the bug's flavor at all? The corn?
I suppose it could.
Sour edge? I don't know.
I suppose it could. I haven't found the need for it.
Yeah.
And certainly you give that a shot.
Huh.
But
because they're up to 20% usage.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot.
Right.
I mean, you just replace that all with crystal malts and specialty
and
aromatic.
Right.
And wow.
Again, I'm shooting for more of a balance between Rodenbach and Rodenbach Grand Cru.
Okay.
I'm shooting for the dead middle of that. You know, a little more sour than Rodenbach, but a lot less sour than Grand Cru. Mm. You know, for quite a drinkable experience.
Well, you wrote yours by taste. I mean, that's the way to do it right there.
Yeah, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You end up with something. And this is one of my more complex recipes as far as grain bill goes. Mm.
Yeah. What do you think about using acidulated malt?
Well, the acidulated malt, I'm not so sure.
Or do you not even need it because of the bugs?
Yeah, you don't need it for sourness. If you did use it, I don't think it's not going to be anywhere near what using the bugs will give you.
Okay.
And same thing for adding something like adding lactic acid later on
mm-hmm.
to the beer. It just doesn't taste the same. There's something very specific about the lactic acid and the other flavors and compounds that are created when the bugs sour up the beer.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really important to the overall perception of this. And you have to do it with the bugs. There's really no other way to do it.
Right.
Same thing for Berliner Weiss and lambics and things like that. I've been to brew pubs where they'll brew some sort of a beer, and then they add like lactic acid, and they'll call it like a lambic, or they'll call it whatever.
That's cheating.
And it's not the same. It's not, you can make something that's drinkable, but if you're, it's like having sex with your sister, I guess.
That's just wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
Have offspring.
You may go that route just because, you can't get anything else.
Right.
But if you have a chance to use the bugs instead, that's the way you really should be going.
Because you could use lactic acid to sterilize yourself. I don't know. Maybe. I had a homebrewer once use lactic acid, and he used the wrong dosage compared to phosphoric acid.
Uh-huh.
And it was... It was just disgusting.
A really sour beer.
Sour beer.
Yeah.
It was like a blonde ale gone sour. It was farmhouse ale, I guess.
Well, no, again, it's not.
It's not. Yeah, you can use the bugs.
Yeah, you got to use the bugs.
My bad.
Right.
Right.
And if you have a beer that didn't turn out right, and you can have beers where it's like, the gravity was a little high, gravity was a little low. I was shooting for a Scottish 70 shilling, end up a little high. Okay, call it an 80. I'm okay with that. I was shooting for a 70 and end up low, call it a 60 shilling. That's cool. No problem.
But if you make a bad beer.
Yeah, when something, tastes like ass and it was supposed to be a nice, clean, American amber ale, it is not. Flanders Red. It's not a lambic. It's not a Belgian beer.
And don't email me about that.
it's an amber that tastes like ass.
Yeah. Now,
those types of beers you want to throw out.
I got sad news for you. I had to dump my first batch in 3 years.
Oh, yeah?
And a brown ale go bad.
It tastes
The air, I never saw bubbles come out, and I think there was this air exposure going into my fermenter.
Uh-huh.
And it tasted like ass. It had a sour edge to it, and I was like, maybe it'll go away in a week. No, and I just dumped all 10 gallons right to the floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay.
And
Justin's like, oh, fuck, I would have drank it.
Yeah, he's walking over the drain right now.
Yeah.
the
It's just bad beer.
Put it away. And that's the thing. I think the people that are the better brewers know when to cut their losses and not screw around with it. Now, if you wanted to experiment with it and, I don't know, waste more time and money on it, you could. But, you know, the savvy brewers are going to say, no, this isn't turning out right, and there's really no hope of recovery. Let me just pitch it now.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get everything sanitized. Let me start again. You know, I want to have this beer ready. I need to get going.
Well, that's a good segue, actually. If you're a home brewer and you're dealing with this stuff, and mm-hmm. bugs, mm-hmm. in your home brewery, how do you keep this from contaminating your other ale batches that you don't want the bugs in? Do you have any tips, like keeping stuff clean?
Yeah, don't stick your sampler in this and then stick it in something else.
What about plastic tubing and stuff?
Plastic tubing. If you can have another set of plastic tubing, if you're using racking canes, I don't use a racking cane, but if you use racking cane,
mm-hmm.
get yourself a separate one, you know, and have a separate set of plastics for this sort of thing. The real hard goods, that like the glass fermenters and stuff, are okay. But plastic stuff, have a separate set. It's really not going to jump from fermenter to fermenter, but if you keep some distance between your fermenters, if you have a blonde ale going and this Flanders going, just keep them in separate areas.
Okay.
And you need to find a place for the Flanders anyways mm-hmm. that's going to sit for 6 months to a year. So I have a downstairs bathroom in my house that's in the shaded part of the house, so it stays fairly cool all the time. And in the shower in there, that's where all my Flanders go.
Wow.
Inside that shower.
So you don't have roommates come over and on stay?
People come over.
Shower with your fermenters?
Well, the people that come over and stay at my house,
yeah.
they understand. Doesn't bother them at all.
That's cool. Like,
oh, okay. The Flanders are in there?
Yeah.
You know, you bathe in the sink because, you know, the Flanders are going.
You know, Colin always told me, just said, you know, bacteria doesn't go up. It goes down. I mean, when my mic could go sideways or whatever, but it falls.
Yeah, you know, all the dust and stuff around your house, covered in bacteria, wild yeast, things like that. All the plants outside your house covered in wild yeast, and there's bacteria on the dust particles.
Okay.
And you can have a wind. That's why you don't want to stir up, if you're working with plates or yeast or things like that, you don't want breezes. Turn off your air conditioner or your heater in your house. Hmm. Close the windows. Ask people. I tell my family, don't walk around in the kitchen when I'm, you know, doing something. Or, you know, if I'm working on yeast, don't walk around. Just, you know, let me have the room in peace for a little while.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them stirring up the air.
Right.
And just let the air be calm for 15 minutes. Hmm. And all the dust and stuff settles down. And then you have a much safer environment to work in.
Hmm.
And, yeah, everything, it's like starters. I don't put a stopper in my starters or an airlock or anything like that. I just use a hunk of aluminum foil.
Yeah.
And as long as you've got that sealed up, you know, the things aren't going to crawl up in there.
Right.
Bacteria don't have no legs. They don't crawl. Same for wild yeast.
It'd be scary.
They're not crawling critters. You know, fruit flies and stuff like that. If you got those, fruit flies ants, they will, go in.
They have acetobacter, right? Fruit flies?
Yes. Yeah. So they will. They got all sorts of things all over them. So they will, and they also, you know, they crawl around on plants and fruits and stuff, and they can pick up yeast as well on their legs.
I hate fruit flies. Where the hell do they come from? You know, you're hanging out in your living room, and all of a sudden there's a fruit fly in your beer. You know, I didn't see it on my table or my couch, but there's a fruit fly in your beer. It could be 30 degrees in your house, and there's a fruit fly. I just had to vent. Sorry.
Hey, anyways, yeah. I'm just stunned.
Yeah, threw you off for a whirl there.
I don't know what to say.
Hmm.
Yeah, so you want to keep things fairly covered so they can't get in, and they will, be nosing around this stuff. So on my bucket and my carboy that I have right now, I have airlocks on them just because I don't want the fruit flies to get in.
Hmm. If you're an extract brewer, can you brew Flanders?
That's an excellent question. You can. It's going to be tricky. And actually, at the Doe's Christmas party, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he said, hey, I brewed this Flanders based on your, you know, recipe using extract. He's like, converted extract and tried it. And it was pretty darn good.
Nice.
And I thought that the thing he really got right was really the souring and the bugs and all that
mm-hmm.
were pretty darn close on.
Cool.
I think his beer needed a little more malt character.
Uh-huh.
But I thought that I was very impressed, and I actually drank like a couple glasses of that, and he was kind of shocked.
It was funny, Justin, Jamil and I, after the event, we were just walking around with our breathalyzers, breathalyzing ourselves, just making sure we could drive safe.
That was after the
Christmas party? Yeah.
Good for you guys.
Yeah.
That's what you should be doing.
Exactly. So do you have an extract recipe or not?
Another odd aside. the coffee's kicking in.
Yeah.
No, I don't have an extract recipe. But I suppose you could replace the Pilsner malt with a Pilsner extract and the Munich malt with a Munich extract, if you can get that. But then there's the Vienna. So really you end up having to partial mash this. Now, the one thing I think on the horizon is Weyermann has a couple of extracts made from like Munich malt and Vienna and Pilsner and all that. Cool. They got these amber extracts that they're doing.
Really?
And I think that if we could get hold of a couple of those might be a really good way to go.
That'd be popular.
Yeah, I think
a Vienna extract, that'd be great.
Well, they've got extracts, I think, where you can just use the extract and make it like an Oktoberfest.
Oh, it's already pre-made.
Yeah.
Wow.
And from a company that really knows, you know, malts and making those kinds of things.
Huh.
So that's pretty impressive.
We'll give Frank a call. Frank Commande.
Yeah.
And Brewer Supply Group.
And, see if you guys can get a hold of that. Because I think it'd be wonderful to try that. And if you had something like that, I think you could make, it would open up a world of recipes to extract brewers, and they wouldn't have to do partial mash or anything like that. I think this beer would work well if you could get an extract like that, and you wouldn't have to partial mash at all.
Cool.
I think it would be fine. And someone in the chat room was asking, can we look at these bugs under the microscope? You can. You need a high enough power microscope to be able to look at bacteria and things like that, and you're going to need like a oil immersion 1000x.
Are you looking for a color for a certain bug, or how do you?
They're like rods and cones and
shape.
Yeah,
okay.
That's
hardcore if you're doing that to make a Flanders. Like, I'd love to try. That's cool.
Yeah, I always say, leave it to the experts. When they can do something for you to, simplify things for you, leave it to the experts. And in yeasts, there's, we're really lucky to have White Labs and to have Y yeast. Hmm. And in the case of making a Flanders red and making a really good one, you want to get your hands on that Rose Lair from Y yeast. And that is going to make you an excellent Flanders red. That is...
That's key.
Huge, huge in it. That is more than 50% of this process.
So the other 50 is a really
getting the
good
right
brew.
Grain bill, yeah. Well, and I'd say that, yeast is, 95% of making a beer, proper fermentation. But, as far as the components go, I would give up, some of the grains just to have the Rose Lair yeast blend.
And it would still be a Flanders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would throw this recipe out, use a completely different grain bill, as long as I had the Rose Lair blend.
There you go.
So that's, that is, a huge key to brewing this beer.
Well, good show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we covered that quite well.
I've never brewed one of these, but you've inspired me.
I'm glad. I'm glad I've moved you, John.
Yeah.
All right, the next show we're going to have coming up in 2 weeks is going to be, I don't know, go to the website.
Rogenbach, I think, or the Rye Beer.
Oh, Rye Beer. Oh, cool. That's a great beer. But you can find it on the website, www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Yes.
Good show. Brew strong, John.
Brew strong. Brew long.
Long and strong. Thanks for listening.
Are you guys done? The Jamil Show has been a production of the Brewing Network.
please send questions for Jamil to jamil@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jamil Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on The Brewing Network.